Hey, my name's Matt Stauffer, and I don't have my stuff pulled up. Hey, I'm your host, Matt Stauffer, and this is episode... I don't remember the episode number. Hi, I'm your host, Matt Stauffer, and this is episode 96 of the 5-Minute Geek Show, a weekly show about development and everything around it. It's one topic per episode about front-end, back-end, mobile, project management, design, entrepreneurship, whatever. If it's geeky, it fits. Today, we're going to be talking about indirect communication. I thought it was going to be about passive aggression, but I did a quick dictionary read of what the definition of passive aggression is, and it turns out it's not quite what I thought it was. So just for what it's worth, if you think of passive aggression, well, if you think of it at all, go take a look at it on Wikipedia and you may find it's a little bit different than what you expected. I tend to think of passive aggression as a little bit of just like a an indirect communication style where you mean one thing, but you say a different thing and you're being aggressive about it. And it seems, at least according to Wikipedia, that passive aggression is much more scoped to being almost always like it seems like in a subordinate context where you don't do the thing you're supposed to, but you don't do it in an indirect way. And I wasn't aware of that. I don't know if that's how I've used it or heard it used. I don't know. So what I'm talking about more is primarily about indirect communication, especially in kind of formal communication structures. And I must caveat up front. The directness versus indirectness of your communication style differs significantly based on your culture. This is a stereotype, so please give it a little bit of grace, but the stereotype, maybe not a stereotype, it's a sociological description that does not apply to all people based on their ethnicity, but it is a good kind of generalization, which is that, most cultures, their directness versus indirectness of communication style is along a line where one side is very direct and one side is very indirect, and the white American and European cultures tend to be right in the middle. Usually African, Black, Latino cultures tend to be on the very direct side, and usually East Asian and some South Asian cultures tend to be in the very indirect side. So I'm a white American. I'm the majority culture. So for me to go and say more people should communicate my way, there's definitely some elements that you need to be careful of there. So please, I'm opening myself up to criticism here if this is just me saying, well, be more like me. However, I have spent a lot of my life trying to understand how to effectively develop relationships and teams cross-culturally. So I hope that I'm saying this in a way that is representative, not just of my personal preference, but also of just kind of how to do things well, at least in the US. And if I were living in Japan, I probably would say a very different thing. In the context that I'm in, especially when I'm dealing with other white people, but also just especially when I'm dealing in a business context, I've found that the amount of indirectness that is acceptable in a lot of white business settings is to successful communication. And I've learned from, especially from Black and Latino friends, that a greater level of directness in communication is actually really helpful for moving things forward in business and communication and understanding each other. So what do I mean here? Let's say you're in a conversation with someone and they say something and you feel like they're correcting you or disagreeing with you or chiding you or saying you've done something wrong, you need to do it differently, but they didn't actually say that. They said something else, but everyone kind of knows what they're implying, right? And so you go along with it and you say, okay, well, that's what they're implying. And so I'm going to read it and you act accordingly to it. You have lost some of your agency in the situation. You have lost some of your ability to confront their statements. You've lost some of your ability to question their statements or even refer back to them later as a source of why you did something. Let's say, a month later, you get in trouble. Why'd you do that? Well, blah, blah, blah told me to. No, they didn't. They implied indirectly that you were supposed to do it. And that can get you in a lot of trouble. It's gotten me in a lot of trouble where I'm responding to things that are so indirect that I can't even refer back to them later. My business partner, Dan, has taught me a lot of things over the years of us being friends and working together. But one of the things he's taught me is that he says, I choose to respond only to the things that people say out loud. Only to the things that people intentionally communicate. And so he knowingly and intentionally does not respond to indirect or hidden or implied or fearfully, suggested signals. Now, granted, it's not like a perfect thing. It's not like he never reads those things, but he kind of makes it his policy to try to avoid acting on what may be and instead act on what people have actually directly communicated. Now, interestingly, in the business, it's good for us to have a balance because I read people a little more than that, and so we balance each other out. So I wouldn't say I'm advocating for just fully, not listening or reading people past what they say at all, but the ways that this has helped me grow, I think, is that when someone communicates something passively to me, I find myself preparing for this to go wrong somewhere. I'm preparing for the moment where I don't even know what it is. Maybe it's the thing where we look back and say, well, why'd you do that? And I point to that or whatever. But it never prepares me for a good situation. I never receive a passive or indirect communication where there's aggression or there's conflict. I'm not saying indirect communication is always bad. I'm saying where there's some sort of like a combination of non-direct communication with aggression or conflict or condescension or whatever else it ends up being, that just never seems to go well. And so what I prefer in that moment is, well, first of all, for us to all to just learn how to communicate a little more directly, at least when we're communicating our dissatisfaction or our conflict. But additionally, when I'm on the receiving end, one of the things I've had to learn to do is either play dumb, which I do at times and drives my wife nuts, or more likely I intend to say, it sounds like you're saying this. Are you saying that? And sometimes that's really feels very, you know, confrontational, aggressive. And again, there's cultural things that you need to consider here. But when my landlord recently passively suggested that I was doing something that I shouldn't have been doing, she's used to communicating extremely passively and everybody bowing to her will. And it felt really weird to me. In this particular circumstance, it feels like it's a power move. It's a manipulative move that she uses, and I don't like it. And so she was right about the thing that should be done, but the way it was communicated and the implications it might have for the future just made me very uncomfortable. And so what I said was, hey, kind of sounds like you're saying this. Is this what you're saying? Is that a thing? If so, let's talk a little bit more about it. And then there was more passivity and indirection and whatever. And then I said, okay, it sounds like you're saying this is a policy. If this is a policy, I'd love to understand what the policy is. Is there a book where these policies are written down? Because essentially, like, I don't want to be held to all of these, like, vaguely communicated policies that just live in someone's head or whatever. And so, like, for me, it was very confrontational, which is difficult because I'm by nature conflict avoidant. But the value I got out of it was the ability to say, man, when things are out in the open, I feel so good. Right? Like when we have explicitly named the things we're talking about, that doesn't mean I was right in the end, right? Like I was wrong in the end. I had done the wrong thing and there was sort of a policy about it, but I understood where it came from. And in the end, I said, okay, I'm sorry. I handled that wrong or I did the wrong thing there. But that felt good. There's a policy. Here is where it is. Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, cool. That, you know, I didn't realize you interpreted that way. Okay, cool. Now I know for next time. What didn't feel good was passive aggression and then you having to cow to someone's passive aggression. I think that's a lot of it, right? I think that passive aggression or whatever this thing is, this level of indirection, being indirect is not bad. Manipulating people using indirect communication is bad. And I don't know where that line is. And I can't say that sociologically I can say how much of this is my, you know, cultural bias or whatever else. But I think that there's a problem when someone is making you feel like you have to respond to the things that they're not even willing to say out loud, at least in my context, at least in my country, at least in my line of business, whatever else it ends up being. So I think the lesson for me is make sure I'm being very direct about the things that I'm communicating and requesting and criticizing or whatever. And also kind of, and this is something I've definitely tried to do as someone who gives code reviews and tries to lead my employees, make sure that you create an environment in which you can give direct feedback without people feeling kind of attacked and harmed and whatever. But I think the other thing is when receiving painfully or manipulatively or problematically indirect feedback, learning how to make it direct, learning how to control the conversation to a way where you're perfectly willing to be open to being wrong, but you are moving the conversation out in the light so you can actually address the real thing that's happening versus having to try and parse out people's intentions. This was a kind of a thinking out loud experience. If you can't tell, I'm an extrovert and I process things externally. So who knows if it makes sense, but I hope it was good for me, you know, it was good for me. So that's a good thing. So also this is my first time recording two things. One is I got some panels hung up on my wall. So I'm interested to go back or let me know if you hear any difference, any lack of echo or anything like that. The other thing, this is my first time recording with Hindenburg, this app that was on sale for $1.90 yesterday. I think it was Michael Dorinda that tweeted it out, instead of GarageBand. So let's see if we notice anything different. And that's it for today. So thanks for listening to the 5 Minute Geek Show at 5 Minute Geek Show on Twitter, the number 5. 5MinuteGeekShow.com, FIVE. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or via RSS. If you like the show, share it with your friends, rate it in iTunes. Thanks. Until next time, Matt Stauffer, 5 Minute Geek Show.
But why did he need the groceries?
Well, he would need the groceries because Spider-Man still has to eat food, right?
So he can get more webs?
And just so he can eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So who lives in New York?
The Power Pack moved to New York. and Spidey lives there.
And who else did we just learn lives there? He lives in Brooklyn.
Captain America.
Okay, Captain America. All right, one last thing I want you to say. Can you say 5 minute geek show?
5 minute geek show?
Say, take it easy.
Take it easy.
Say, see you on the flip side.
See you on the flip side.
There you go.
Flip side.